Welcome to ACM SIGMOD's series of interviews with distinguished members of the database community. I'm Marianne Winslet, and today we're in Phoenix, site of the 2012 SIGMOD and PODS conference. I have here with me Stratos Idraeus, who is the 2011 recipient of the SIGMOD Jim Gray Dissertation Award for his thesis entitled Database Cracking Towards Auto-Tuning Database Kernels. Stratos' advisors were Stefan Monigold and Martin Kirsten, and his PhD is from the University of Amsterdam. Stratos is currently a tenure-track researcher at the Dutch National Research Institute for Mathematics and Computer Science, CWI. So, Stratos, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell me what your thesis is about.
My thesis introduced the concept of database cracking. The main idea is that every query that comes to the database system, we use it as an advice on how data should be stored on disk and in memory. So basically, the system creates indexes incrementally and on the fly during query processing. So normally, database systems would need enough idle time and workflow knowledge to create indexes. Now, with database cracking, indexes just are created automatically without you having to worry about all these preparation processes.
So when you say incrementally, do you mean you create the whole index while queries are running, or you create part of a traditional index?
Exactly. That's a very good question. So creating the whole index while queries are running, this is online indexing. So there's a couple of works by Suraj, for example, and Microsoft that do online indexing. Our work is about incremental indexing. So exactly, we create only parts of the index during query processing. So let me give you a more representative example. Mm-hmm. Indexes are created within select operators, for example, and only partially. So if you have a query that says, give me a select operator, not a query, it's about the operators. Give me everything from this attribute between values 20 and 30.
Yeah.
Then we would take the column of attribute A, for example, and we would split it in three parts from 0 to 20, from 20 to 30, from 30 to whatever. And then you have range partitioning in three pieces, and that is enough information to improve future queries.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then if you want to use an index in the future, you start by checking if the data it's covered.
So if this partitioning exists, you can use it, you can exploit it, and you enhance it even more. So these little pieces that you create, they become smaller and smaller with every other query. And every other query introduces more and more partitioning, which means more knowledge mm-hmm. about how data is laid mm-hmm. On this, mm-hmm. And that you can exploit. And by pieces becoming smaller, performance becomes better.
So when you say smaller, what do you mean smaller? I would think they become larger over time.
Larger in terms of how many they are, smaller mm-hmm. in terms of how many tuples they have inside.
I see. So they get divided into finer grained pieces.
Yes. And if you think about it, every range select operator, you have to touch at most two pieces because you only have to check the boundaries of your range mm-hmm. and that's at most two pieces. And by pieces becoming smaller, you have to analyze less tuples with every other query.
Doesn't this make query optimization harder?
Yes and no. No, because we have chosen to always use indexes. So every query will use indexes. There's no decision about that. You blindly go and use database cracking with every other query. Mm-hmm. You can think about it as if we always create clustered indexes, basically. Mm-hmm. It's not secondary indexes.
I see. Okay. When you say it's not secondary indexes, do you mean you rearrange the data on disk to match?
Yes. So we arrange the actual data. We create copies of the data, and we arrange these copies. So mm-hmm. the first time that you query, for example, you want to select over attribute A,
yeah.
we create a copy of this column and we start rearranging this column.
Mm-hmm.
And every query that wants to select on A will go directly there and won't go to the base data mm-hmm. anymore.
And so if a later query is on attribute B, you make another copy
exactly.
with B? And not the whole tuple, just the tuple ID is there?
There's not. It's attribute B and the tuple ID. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Well then, but what about updates?
That's a tricky business. But what we do with updates is that we defer them. So we, when you update scan, we just keep them on the side, and we only merge them when a relevant query comes. So let's go back to the previous example. Attribute A between 0 to 20, 20 to 30, and so on. Then if another query comes and says, okay, I want values between 20 and 25, if and only if there are updates within this range, then we merge them on the fly during query process. So the select operator would not only fine-grain the partitioning information, it will also merge updates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if I understood correctly, if the query is over attributes A and B, you'll have a little index that's just for that range of A and B.
Yes.
Very interesting. So how did you show that's better than the alternatives?
So first of all, let me clarify that this kind of ideas, this kind of research is applicable for exploratory dynamic workloads.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case that you know exactly what you're looking for, you have enough idle time to prepare your indexes for that, you should not be using database cracking. There's no sense in mm-hmm. doing that. But in the case where you don't have enough knowledge about the workload mm-hmm. and you don't have enough idle time to prepare, then is when you should be using database cracking. So what do we always do in our experiments is that we compare database cracking with a plain non-indexing approach where you have to scan your data. And we always compare with the perfect indexes, which is in the case of column stores, when you have basically sorted arrays.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the equivalent of offline indexing in this case,
mm-hmm.
Because in order to sort an array, you need time to do the sorting,
mm-hmm.
and you need the knowledge that this array is useful, let's sort it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we typically see in these examples is that database cracking has a performance where it starts with the first query being almost as expensive as a scan, just a little bit more expensive, mm-hmm. and then it quickly improves performance, and after a few queries, it reaches the optimal performance of an index. But the offline indexing approach takes typically 10 times more in order to create the index.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have idle time, the first query has to have a penalty of 10 times more overhead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting.
So maybe a more representative example would be we run queries with TPCH, for example.
Mm-hmm.
In order to create the optimal indexes for columns in TPCH, in this particular machine that we used and everything, we needed about 3 hours.
I see.
With cracking, we could answer all queries, getting into optimal performance in a matter of seconds, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then how... So if you just did cracking with no previous knowledge of the TPCH workload versus if you had created the perfect indexes beforehand, what's the difference in performance at runtime of the transactions?
So we don't do transactions. Mm-hmm. We do only read queries. Mm-hmm. But the difference compared to the optimal index is basically zero. You reach the optimal performance.
Uh-huh.
You don't reach the optimal performance as of query one.
Uh-huh.
In the case of TPCH, it's actually a good case for us because it's a rather skewed workload.
Uh-huh.
You reach the optimal performance in a matter of 5 to 10 queries.
Uh-huh.
And the good point is that as of query number two, you're way below the performance of a no-index approach.
Mm-hmm.
But then as of query 5, 10, you reach the optimal performance of the perfect index. Now, if you devise micro benchmarks, this optimal where you have random workloads basically, it's not skewed.
Uh-huh.
This optimal performance comes after thousands of queries, not after 5 or 6.
Yeah, very interesting. Do you have any words of advice for today's PhD students?
Oh, I would have many, I guess. my main lesson that I try to remember now after my PhD. Is that I stopped taking reject reviews very religiously.
Mm.
So one very big mistake I think that I made over the years is that sometimes I got reject, and I got many of them, reviews, and then I thought that, okay, I should react very, very seriously based on this review. And sometimes I ended up basically destroying my papers, making them very dense, just because I was trying to put every little detail in there.
Uh-huh.
So I think this would be a bit, although we should take rejects very seriously and the comments of the reviewers, but maybe we should also take a step back and think about it again.
Uh-huh. Is there another piece of advice that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I would say that it's not only about research, you should also take good care of yourself as well. So mm-hmm. maybe sometimes take a step back, don't do so much research,
mm-hmm.
Do some physical activity. So.
Very good. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.